Welcome to another edition of Lex Talk History, a podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the Lexington History Museum. Now, here's your hosts, Lexington History Museum Executive Director Mandy Higgins and WUKY's own Alan Lytle.
Welcome in once again, Mandy.
It's good to be back, Alan. It's
been kind of a hot minute since we got together.
It has been. It's been this fall, man. Whew. So busy. So many 250 things.
Yes. Especially like October, we were talking about equine and what a great month that was.
It was equine month. We had a lot of people in for the meet. And at the museum, we had the Mary Todd Lincoln traveling exhibit, which was great. Really incredible work that they've done as part of 250. And they have a children's book that was a big hit with our school groups. So we were thrilled about that. We also hosted Estelle Pennington, who's an art historian, talking a little bit about why Hopemont, the John Hunt Morgan House, has a Lord Byron painting, which was cool.
Fascinating story.
Like, just things that you didn't think you would know about Lexington, and all of a sudden you're talking about Edward West and Lord Byron and romantic paintings. And then maybe my favorite thing that I'm so excited about, we have for most of the fall been working with the STEAM Academy, Fayette County Public Schools STEAM Academy, to help them create exhibit and art pieces inspired by 250 Lex. So I went out to STEAM Academy and we did a talk, and then they came to the museum and saw how we interpret this stuff. And it's been really, really incredible. STEAM is cool, first of all, just as a, you know, it's science, technology, engineering, arts, woo, and math.
Extra A in there.
Extra A.
Okay, okay.
So it's very cool that they have kept the humanities alive within that STEM curriculum. The students are from every zip code in Fayette County, and they're really engaged in this creative idea about how can I take my interests academically and apply them to what we're talking about in Lexington. So one student has made quilts about pieces of Lexington's history. Another student is, like me, obsessed with the fire department and going to do something around the fire department and their long impact. So it's just a really cool engagement moment, and something we're really excited about to continue to figure out ways that we can plug in with students who are so passionate about their town. And then if the public wants to see some of this, they are having an event on December 9th from 5:30 to 7:30 showing off what the students have done and created. And I am just so proud of their ability to think about this and the museum playing a little role in it.
Isn't it exciting when young people get excited about history?
Yes. It is so fun to watch their eyes just light up. So, as our listeners know, I spent a little bit of time in the classroom before I found my true love in public history. And you, as a classroom instructor, you get that sort of all the time feedback because you can watch students make the connection. When you're doing work in a museum, you don't always get to see that. So having kids in the museum, having those aha moments, watching them say, oh my gosh, there was, you know, this painter is actually from Lexington, or they made that, and I also want to do that, and that's possible, has been really, really edifying in the work that we do. And I think proves a lot of what we're trying to say and do. We're not telling them anything that's beyond, like, this is what happened in Lexington, and it's blowing their minds. So we're really, really excited to see what they come up with these pieces and how they can tie their very current passion with a historical lens. It's going to be great.
We should also mention the veterans' banners and the multimedia.
Yeah. So second year in a row, the Lexington History Museum has partnered with LFUCG's Commission on Veterans Affairs to hang veterans' banners along Vine Street. This year, they were crowdsourced, so nominated from folks in town. We had 30 banners. And then the museum's piece of this, we create a digital exhibit to complement the banner. So you can learn a little bit more about each veteran's service and their life after service, or before, depending on what happened. So we were really excited to have this one this year. They're diverse all over, 20th century, mostly, but some Global War on Terror participants, folks who enlisted and had 50-year careers, and individuals who were drafted and did one tour of Vietnam and were like, we're done. And folks who did, you know, who signed up for a couple of years of reserve training. And it was really it's a really great public piece to sort of make the connection that, you know, Veterans Day is a real thing. These are real people who have made sacrifices, and they're right here in town, and we can honor them. You can view the digital exhibit on our website at lexhistory.org/veterans, and that is available year round. The veterans banners themselves will come down pretty soon to make way for holiday banners. But you can drive on Vine Street and see those beautiful faces.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing that the city and the History Museum are able to collaborate on to honor our men and women who have worn the uniform.
Yes, we're really glad to be a part of that.
Well, that leads us now, if we're talking about education especially, mm-hmm. Our Lex Get Into It portion of this conversation.
Yeah, so... November, how is it November 2025, is Arts Month for 250 Lex, and this month we are so happy to be joined by Lexington filmmaker and our friend Jeff Hoagland.
Hello, Mandy.
Hi, Jeff. So as a preview, and then it's going to be the Jeff show for a little bit, Jeff Hoagland and I met 2 years ago, probably, mm-hmm. In the museum. He just sauntered in one day to see what we were doing. And that has led to this really fruitful partnership through 250 Lex, where Jeff and his partner Elizabeth Greenfield have worked very diligently in creating some multimedia that complements what we do in the museum and complements Lexington's story. But before we talk about discovering Lexington, can you tell us a little bit more about you?
Sure. And first off, thank you so much for having me in here today, Mandy and Alan. It's great to be in WUKY Studios and collaborate with Lex History on anything it does. So my background is a writer and documentary filmmaker. I'm from Lexington, went to UK, had a brief sojourn out in California after college, and then ultimately found a passion for telling stories, mostly in the nonfiction realm, at a stint at KET. So I was lucky enough to be brought on board a Sally Brown documentary by an old friend, Janet Whitaker, many years ago, and was able to contribute to that as a writer and an editor, and sort of learn sort of the ways in which we use film and digital media nowadays to put together stories. And so that started me on a long and varied journey to try to tell people's stories in any way that I can. I went to film school in New York, and after which I have, for the last two decades, worked on national television programs, independent documentary films. I've worked as a ghostwriter. I've taught myself. I've worked in art installations and as a biz dev consultant, frequently in New York, sometimes in Colorado, sometimes out west again, but always coming back to Lexington, always interested in my hometown and how it's changing and diversifying and finding itself. And one of the things that I often tell people about that inquire about Lexington is just the enormous amount of change that I've seen in my lifetime. When I was maybe 16, 17, 18, I don't remember a lot of multicultural parades and festivals around town. And if they were occurring, information was not getting to me. I remember Tim Couch jerseys and Rick Pitino jerseys, and love the Cats, love the football team, love the basketball team. But every time I come back or I'm spending an extended stay here, I go to somewhere, whether it's the Pride Festival or the things they do at Southland or on the North Side, there is this totally different energy that I sense here, and I enjoy it. And I think that there are a lot of people and a lot of institutions that are pushing that forward, and certainly Lex History is one of them. So it's just it's a treat to collaborate with you all on this project, but also just to be a part of a place that I feel like, despite lots of missteps and lots of struggles that we all face, just as a place, it really, I think, has been changing for the better, and has been more inclusive and more interesting and exciting and culturally relevant as the years go by, even though sometimes maybe it doesn't seem so to certain folks.
Yeah, it has. I was having this conversation this morning with someone of Lexington being this place that draws you back, mm-hmm. right? That like you, maybe you've been here once and you're drawn back in, or you grew up here and you leave and you come back, and that it, no matter where you go, it, Lexington is a sort of unique place, and it's hard to put into words. And the person I was talking to this morning was talking about it as the friendliness of Lexington. But it's true too. You know, I came here 22 years ago to go to UK, and the things that were happening 22 years ago when I was a student compared to what we're doing now is like, what drew me here then? It was the basketball team.
Hey, no shame.
No shame. Go Cats.
Number one.
But it's true. It's like this changes of what we've seen in the last 20 years is unbelievable, and it all kind of comes back to these pieces of what we've been celebrating all year.
Yeah. And it is warm. It's also weird. It's also talented. Mm-hmm. I think one of the interesting things about this entire 250 Lex journey for the city and the commission and everyone is by highlighting all these different sectors, both public and private and cultural, and different people and our talented artists that have gone away and come back, you really get a sense of just how, if you want to talk about music, if you want to talk about architecture, if you want to talk about writing, if you want to talk about business and development and new technology, there's just a lot of talent here. And specifically culturally, as the city has, I think, become a little more open and engaging with different populations and people, there's just a vibrancy that it brings. And so, yeah, it's a place that I think does draw people back. And but it's also a place that I think is trying. And because when you talk about, well, Lexington seems like a more inclusive place or a more diverse place, there's inevitably going to be folks that don't feel that right now. And I do think what's interesting is that there's just a lot of people out there that are pushing at the edges, and they're trying to sort of remake Lexington, Kentucky in a way that's just the most conducive to the future and to being a welcoming place and being that warm place for people.
Yeah. So that is a forward-looking idea for the city, but we spent the year looking backwards a little bit.
Correct.
Let's talk a little bit about this collaboration and what you've done with Discovering Lexington.
Sure thing. So Discovering Lexington is an umbrella term for four multidisciplinary projects that we're creating in collaboration with Lex History. And I would say that the approach to it is, when people think about history, they often think about biography. They often think about a chain of data points and information, which is a great way to learn about history. And it's nothing wrong with that at all. But we wanted to take a slightly different approach with this. And in these four projects, create a more fragmentary, indirect look at people, places, and things, so that we could drill down on the experience that a person might have had, or the experience that a person living today has working on that project, in order to try to find some authenticity and focus on impact, emotional resonance, and the effect that it has on the audience, rather than information. And one of the reasons we took that tact in conversations with you and your great team is that, well, first thing, the intersections, the entire display that you all have is incredible, and it's overwhelming to walk through the history of a place. But inevitably, there are limits to what you can do in a display in a physical space. There are limits to what resources you have to put in which directions. So what we tried to do was find a few stories that might be conducive to a few different ways and processes of creating media that would bring that story maybe to a different audience, maybe to a different audience in a different way, hopefully so that it augments the story that has been told and is being told by you, but also many stories that people might not know too much about.
Not to belabor, but I do want to walk through sort of each one a little bit.
Sure thing.
So let's start with Charlotte Dupuis.
Okay.
Charlotte Dupuis is a pretty decently known mm-hmm. Lexington story. Mm-hmm. Enslaved by Henry Clay, mm-hmm. Sues for her freedom, mm-hmm. eventually mm-hmm. isn't found to not have standing and is mm-hmm. sent off and then comes back to Lexington mm-hmm. and those sorts of things. Can you tell us a little bit about how you augmented what that story is?
Sure thing. And it's a great one to start with, because I would say that the process that we took to develop this project is indicative of sort of what we were talking about. So we have created an animated short film called Move Along Lottie, and it does cover the story of Charlotte. But when I talk about fragmentary and indirect, that doesn't, and kind of a vibey piece of media, it doesn't always mean the content itself. So sometimes it means the way that you create something and what kind of experience you give to the people that are helping you create it. So for this one, we brought on Samara Jade Johnson, who is a terrific writer, poet, musician, ensoulment doula, comet across the sky in Lexington, who then found us a writer named Teresha Buckley. And Samar took all of the information that we provided them and created a series of prompts and a series of sort of meditative statements that she then used in a writing session with Teresha, who did not know the story, to try to elicit some real, raw, authentic language. Teresha's a writer. About the story of Charlotte as she discovered it herself, and about her feeling as a Black woman living in Lexington today about this story as she receives it. So again, we gave Samar some information and a lookbook and a kind of general outline of what probably needs to occur in the film. And then they crafted something and had an experience with Teresha. And then out of that came a bunch of great, authentic, powerful language from this experience, that we then took and crafted into a script that's suitable for being the skeleton of a film, and then found a local Lexington design firm, Life Space, to create some animated animated and still images. Found some music. We're using Rhythm Science Sound in Louisville for that soundtrack, and have come up with a small 8-minute story that does tell the story of Charlotte's life and importance, but also I think has something different to it, with the idea that it will resonate with people in maybe a different way than just reading mm-hmm. about her story might on a board, which is also amazing. So that's kind of in a sense what we are trying to do with all of these projects, and I certainly don't. I'm happy to walk through all of them with you.
Yeah. I just want to point out with the Charlotte one. So, of course, these all of the stories we're talking about have the board sort of written piece of it within the museum exhibit. And Charlotte's piece was really hard for us because the sort of motif of intersections is the people and their faces. And we don't have Charlotte's face. It doesn't exist in the historical record that we know of. So having this animated piece that can sort of embody mm-hmm. Her spirit is a place where we're going to be able to do something that we, in a traditional, more static museum, we can't do. And as you know, we don't want to make up who she was mm-hmm. in a history exhibit where the art allows us to sort of expand that.
Yeah, and it's across all of the projects, that's the goal, mm-hmm. is to find a medium and a type, a method for telling a story that fits what couldn't be done in another medium. And for Charlotte's, for that story specifically, Move Along Lottie, we really enjoyed, we built out information to give to Samar that included the fact that Charlotte is not was never photographed. Mm-hmm. That it's and so there are elements in the story, direct address from Charlotte to the audience, that do refer to what it means to have one's life and experience in history lost to time, because at the time, the society you lived in did not deem it valuable. Mm-hmm. And what responsibility we have on the other side, whether it's someone that's just trying to create a moving piece of art, or someone that's just trying to tell someone else the story so that they can tell someone else the story, you know, that obligation, that in a subtle way, some of that is built into the story. And so we're just really happy to have something that hopefully can work along with not only the exhibits that you all have, but part of the entire project of Discovering Lexington is to create free media that can be used by educators and tool sets and variety and for perpetuity. So there is a permanence and a free to access part of it.
Right. And so that's Charlotte.
Yeah, that's Charlotte.
The other, what I think is really difficult story that we tell in Intersections is RCO Benjamin.
Mm-hmm.
So RCO Benjamin, for those who don't know, was a world-renowned poet, a lawyer, the first black lawyer to pass the bar in California, uh-huh. was on the Caleb Powers defense team, uh-huh. which Caleb Powers was accused of shooting Governor Goebel.
Also, crazy story. The deep dive on that story is insane.
It's insane.
I didn't know about it until doing the research for this,
yeah.
and I thought, wow, what is the situation in which this very, very accomplished Lexington black lawyer would be on this team? And then you just, all the way down. So it's
wild.
Fascinating.
If you don't know the Goebel assassination story, highly
check
recommend.
It yeah.
Check it out. Only sitting
wild.
Governor sitting,
yeah.
which is
in
also
history,
controversial
right?
yeah. to be assassinated in history. Mm-hmm. It is wild. Anyway.
Also resonant today. There were some, you know, there were
mm-hmm.
efforts to use the... I believe the sitting Congress to, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's wild, yeah.
It's wild. So Benjamin himself, mm-hmm. really accomplished man, but is murdered in Lexington for registering folks to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And so that story is one that is really powerful. It's really meaningful in a lot of ways. It's really hard, and you sometimes the emotion, like we're talking with Charlotte, doesn't necessarily come through when you're right, when it's just words on a wall. They're good words and you should see them,
great
but
words.
the emotion behind it might not be as powerful. So can you tell us a little
sure.
bit what you did with Mr. Benjamin's story?
So one of the things that we are really interested to do with this project is to collaborate with a lot of different people from a lot of walks of life, and people that sort of embody and can tell in an authentic way the stories that we're trying to put across. So one of our favorite examples of that is a woman named Michelle Tyrene Johnson. She is the playwright for the story of RCO Benjamin, which is an audio drama. It's like an old-time radio play. So we went out looking for a playwright, and we just hit the jackpot with Michelle. She was a lawyer. She was a journalist. She has a job as a radio producer in Louisville. And then at this stage in her life has become a playwright. And so she has this background that is connected to RCO, both being black folks in America in their respective time, working in those fields. She's also a terrific writer. And so for that audio drama, which is entitled Benjamin's Victory, we were able to collaborate with Michelle and give her a bunch of research provided by Lexington History and work through what we felt like needed to be a focus on this person, RCO Benjamin's life rather than his death. So as you said, he came to a tragic end here in Lexington trying to register black men to vote. And a lot of times stories might put a priority on that part. But instead we wanted to move in a direction that was more focused on his life and his success and the inspiration that he was for a lot of people. And so we quickly ran into a situation where the scope of our project and what we wanted to do doesn't necessarily allow for us to tell his full story. And so sometimes I think about it, whether you're working in like memoir or working in short film or even sometimes long film, I always think about it like a mosaic. If you think about the whole story of someone's life, it's this whole mosaic. And if you stand back, you can see, you know, the full picture. But you're never going to be able to capture that. You can rarely capture even some of it. So what you want to do is find your little tiny piece of the mosaic and just make those colors and those lines as vibrant, as powerful as possible, with the idea that other people are going to come along and fill in the rest. So that's what we tried to do with RCO Benjamin. We brought on Michelle, and we realized that we just wanted to focus on some key parts of his life and tell that part of it. And really just were so thrilled at the work that she was able to create, again, drawing from this background of a person that has so many similar connections to RCO Benjamin. So that has been produced largely in Louisville, and we have a bunch of terrific Louisville actors, including Keith McGill and Erica Denise and Alphaeus Green Jr. It's being produced by a woman named Melinda Beck. And that's going to end up as a sort of 15 to 18 minute all audio, old time radio play with sound effects and music and a narration. And we just like the fact that we were able to pull this group together and create something that, again, does drill into what Michelle and her collaborators feel about and can try to access in terms of his life and ultimately his end. And so we're just thrilled with the way it came out. And that is that's one of the projects that we're, you know, most excited about, you know, showing to people in the future.
We didn't say this, but Mr. Benjamin's life was in the late 19th century, and then he died in 1900. So a radio play is also close to the kind of entertainment that his children would have experienced, that folks who knew him could have experienced, which is a really thoughtful way of engaging in that piece.
Thank you for that connection. I kind of went all the way around the circle to get back to that starting point. But yes, you're right. And having some connection to that time and place through the medium, I think is important and does sort of draw people in a way that hopefully will resonate with audience members and people that sort of interact with it.
Absolutely. So the last of the sort of people-based project is one that I think a lot of Lexingtonians will be super excited about because it's Les McCann.
Yes. Legend.
Legend, the legendary Les McCann, who we've talked about a lot on this podcast, so I don't know that I need to give a big bio, but for those who forgot, Les was a jazz musician, the most sampled jazz musician in history. Really, I think he had like 60 albums, some just unbelievable output, and was right here in Lexington, growing up, learning
Easton.
Teaching himself.
Yep.
Shiloh
Baptist, I believe.
Yeah.
So yes, again, this is this project is called Les is in the Room, and it's sort of indicative of what one can do with art and media, especially in the film world. This is a short film, probably 10 to 12 minutes, but we didn't want to approach Les McCann head on and make a documentary about his life. There's a lot of information about Les McCann. We didn't have the scope, again, or the scale to do that justice. Portraitures, his paintings incredible, his photographs are incredible. It's this incredible body of work that he left. So rather than attempting that or trying to do something that was small and tries to capture someone that was so large in people's minds, we're kind of working with this fragmentary, indirect approach where we have spoke with various people around Lexington about music, about jazz, about Lexington jazz and Lexington music, about the power of culture, and with Les is the background. So the reason it's called Les is in the Room is that these are conversations that mostly our associate producer and producer, Maya McCutcheon, is having with various individuals about how music and Lexington jazz specifically has impacted their life, how music and Black culture have changed throughout the decades, including the civil rights movement and various other sort of epoch-making changes that we've seen in society, and with the goal being that we're having a conversation about art and music with very talented people, and again, hearing about their experiences with Les and seeing some photographs from his brother, who most people don't know, photographed a large part of the Lexington civil rights movement.
Yeah, we don't have proof without Calvert McCann.
Yeah, it's incredible. And so the film is sort of shaped up to be a melange of people speaking about what moves them, relating to Les McCann and giving us some sense of who he was, and then talking about their own work. And we've got people like Keith McCutcheon and Dave Shelton and Letitia Coleman, who was at Dunbar with Les McCann, and tells this story in which she was the best pianist in her class. And then one day this guy comes in and it's Les McCann and he's thrumping about on the thing. And she thought, this guy's never going to be nothing. And then a number of years later, she turns on, I think, the radio or the television, and there's Compared to What, and it's taking over the jazz airwaves. And Letitia has become a teacher and a musician. She's all over the place doing great stuff. So it's just an example of the type of people that we wanted to find. Again, it's a small project, but it's one that hopes to get at something that's real and emotional and vibey about why do people like jazz? Why do they like Les McCann? What's it like to be a musician in Lexington today? So yeah, we're really happy with that too.
If you come to the museum now, you can see a couple of clips including Miss Coleman's. Mm-hmm. But I have just adore Mr. Grundy. Mm-hmm. Chester Grundy is just mm-hmm. a Lexington treasure, and his little piece mm-hmm. that we have in the museum now is mm-hmm. so fun because it's exactly what you're getting at. He's talking about Les, but he's also talking about, like, now come on, guys.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
there's more. That's right. In Lexington.
That's right.
And
that's right.
Yes, Les, but also. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a beautiful piece. And for folks who don't know Mr. Grundy, it's such a lovely way to see this man who has devoted his life to mm-hmm. jazz in Lexington in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Talk about why and talk about how. And
we're hoping to show some portion of the film at one of the Jazz Origin Series upcoming events. And I would say, too, given that you brought up the 30-second, one-minute mm-hmm. sort of little snippets that we have in the museum, is that one of the things we found interesting about this project, too, is it's sort of modular. The idea is that we have a 10-minute version of this documentary, but it was shot in a way that we can create smaller versions, 1 minute, one minute, 2 minutes of various people. And so we're trying to experiment with just a different way of getting this information out. And so some of it might be atomized into social media. Some of it might land as a 5 minute or a 15 version, but we're hoping that that there's just a variety of ways that we could support what you all do by constantly feeding some of this great content that we have with these different people, and also iterate on ways as Lex History has focused itself around doing, iterate ways to find new ways to reach people and new methods and technologies that might find new audiences.
Yeah, you don't know this, so get excited.
Okay, good.
You may know, we've been doing On These Day posts mm-hmm. in the museum, and we posted for Les's birthday, mm-hmm. And I stumbled across pictures that I wish I had stumbled across mm-hmm. in May mm-hmm. when we were making an exhibit. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned Dunbar. He was the band captain.
Are you talking about the picture with
yeah,
the, in the hat?
Yeah,
yeah, I've got that picture.
Yeah, it's an incredible, incredible picture. So you can see it on the museum Facebook page.
Yeah, yeah. It took me forever to... Did you find a caption? Because it took me forever to really figure out that it looked like him. Mm-hmm. I thought it was him. It dates to around the same time that having had the conversation with Letitia that mm-hmm. I knew that. But I wasn't able to find enough veracity in order to put it in the...
So the now we're going to get real nerdy
yeah.
museum
yeah,
for
nerdy.
A second.
Yeah.
The University of Kentucky's digital archives includes the Herald Leader, collection, and it's mm-hmm. a photographer who's the Wyatt collection.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's in the Wyatt collection,
oh, okay.
and so it had the date
oh,
of,
a...
and it was him, and, yeah. you know, I don't know how I didn't find it in May,
yeah.
but I found it when we were doing this for his birthday in October, and I was like, oh, like, what I love about what you've done with these projects and about what we're doing with all this is, like, he was just a kid
yeah.
at Dunbar High School
yep.
doing what kids at Dunbar High School do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in the newspaper because he's leading the band.
It's a great
right?
photo.
It's an incredible photo. But it's just a normal day.
Yeah.
Right. Like, he's not Les McCann yet
mm-hmm.
in that
mm-hmm.
sense of us. And so being able to sort of make those connections, mm-hmm. I think, is talking, kind of reflecting with the STEAM Academy that this, like, that's it, right?
Well, and to the we mythologize people such that it seems like us regular folks can't do those things.
Right.
And when you're talking about the STEAM Academy, and I'm assuming that you're constantly running up against folks who don't think they can reach those levels or they don't have it inside of them to get there. And by reminding people that everybody starts out in the same place, and if you nurture what you've got and you work hard, you can achieve those things. And so it's always fun to find
yeah.
that sort of background picture or that before they were famous picture, and just remember it's that we're all just people, but it's still an inspirational
yes.
point of view.
Absolutely. So the other piece is vastly different than
yes.
the things that we've been talking about,
yes.
but also very kind of harkens back to what Lexington is in
yes.
some ways. Yeah.
Yes. It's Lexington. The name is Lexington Timescape, and we have partnered with a local sort of AR VR company called VR Together. They make games for flourishing, mostly augmented reality, virtual reality software for helping people with a variety of mostly cognitive issues. And so this project, Lexington Timescape, is sort of an immersive, again, not to use the word too much, vibey, and experiential kind of drift through Lexington history. We found a number of music pieces throughout our history of Lexington in different time periods, and a number of sort of audio pieces of people speaking about different things throughout history. And so we've sort of layered that into this experience wherein someone could put headphones on at Triangle Park, which is where this will eventually be debuted, and walk through the park. And based on this technology and one's locator on their phone, you can sort of drift through these by walking around Triangle Park. It will sense different, the app will sense different areas that you're in, and sort of raise and lower on both sides of your headset the volume of these pieces that we've created, so that you can kind of walk and drift through a history of Lexington. And there will also be some information on what those things are on the app and on the phone. But it's sort of it's designed as a soundscape of sorts to hear somewhat context-free music and speech and sound of different eras of Lexington, but then on the app and certainly on Lex History's website, we'll have context for what those are. So it's kind of like, you know, close your eyes and walk around for 15 minutes and feel and experience change, but also we'll have some information on sort of what those things are and why they were important. And so we're prepping for an event that's coming up very soon. That's one that we won't have for that event, but we hope to have some more information about that pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this
it's
one
gonna be
too.
Cool.
It's been a long time
yeah.
thing that we've been trying
yeah.
to be like, how
yeah.
do you even do this? So
yeah.
that's been an incredible piece for us. Well, you talked about the event.
Mm-hmm.
We want people to come to
we
the
want
event.
We want people to come to the event.
So let's talk about the event.
Let's do that. November 22nd, mm-hmm. Saturday morning, 11 a.m., mm-hmm. Farish Theater, yeah. downtown public library.
What are we going to do?
Well, we are going to show portions of three of these projects. So we mentioned at the top, Move Along Lottie, the animated short film. We mentioned Benjamin's Victory, which is the audio drama. and we mentioned Les Is in the Room, the documentary. So we're going to have some of the folks that helped make those in attendance. We're going to screen those for the audience. And then I think at the end, I know that Michelle Tyrene Johnson, our playwright, is coming down from Louisville. So in the end, I hope to maybe have a short panel discussion, maybe with the three of us, mm-hmm. to talk about how one approaches art and creation around existing figures in nonfiction. I mean, one of the things that I'm always interested about your job is that there are so many ways in which to present information to people. There's so many ways to grab their attention. There's so many ways to like conform what you do for maximum effect. And we're in a fractured media landscape where it's really hard to know how to do that. And so I think there's a lot of thought nowadays that goes into not just how what the content's going to be, but what packaging it's going to be wrapped in, and what how we're going to where are our biases and the people that we reach and how we reach them. And so constantly figuring out new ways of getting information across is going to help break down some of those barriers that still exist. Language, class, various identities, just how are we making sure that the whole group of people in a society or civilization that want to learn about the past, need to learn about the past, can be reached. And so those are heady thoughts. And but Michelle's all, as my grandmother used to say, she's all eat up with all that. So I think we could have a very nice discussion just about some of those things, and then how she approached taking a life as big as R.C.O. Mm-hmm. Benjamin and condensing it into something that is 18 minutes, because it's a real tall order.
Yeah. I mean, I have those same questions about the work that you mm-hmm. do, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, there are lines for historians mm-hmm. that as a historian, if I'm doing history, I can't, shouldn't mm-hmm. cross. Mm-hmm. Whereas an artist has that, has a little bit more of that freedom. So sure. having that conversation around, you know, the stories that we can tell about RCO from straight history mm-hmm. versus how taking a historical figure and using art sure. to sort of interpret that life can be so different, and
sure.
How they can be symbiotic. Because I think there is this false narrative that it can't be both.
Yes.
Right? Like there's... historians are we're a prickly bunch.
Yeah.
But Hamilton tells us that like, there is an appetite for
yes.
this, right? Oh, Mary, there's an appetite yes. for this.
Death Friends. By Lightning.
Death yeah. by oh, Lightning. Yeah.
Netflix.
Yeah, yeah. Chester Arthur.
Yeah.
Never in my life.
The sausages.
Chester Arthur. Like
crazy.
I have a PhD in American history. Mm-hmm. He's the president I don't remember mm-hmm. most of the time. Mm-hmm. And now he has a Netflix series.
Yeah,
that's wild.
It is.
So there is, like, obviously there's an appetite for this. Mm-hmm. And how do we work together
yeah,
to make that
absolutely.
As good as it can be mm-hmm. And not be like, whoa, they were white. Or,
yeah.
you know, from
yeah.
a Hamilton perspective, or
yeah.
we don't know what they said.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
This,
well, and.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of truth in fiction, and mm-hmm. one of the things that you run into when you're dealing in nonfiction, especially from an accurate historical or journalistic perspective, is that we just don't know what people said at times, and we don't know how they felt, and we don't know, and that keeps us from being able to fully relate to them, and I think understand their actions, their behaviors, and the subsequent consequences of those things. And what fiction can sometimes do is that, yes, you're putting your personhood, you're embodying this character with some of your own life, but you're doing so and trying to get at a like a universal truth. And sometimes that universal truth can be more enlightening and more context given than all the data and the facts in the world. And so I think you're right, like that unification of institutions like the Lexington History Museum who have to toe a certain line in order to be what you need to be, but in collaboration with artists, you know, you can find ways to sort of do both, and it's not about one teaches and the other entertains. It's to me, it's really about capturing attention, and then putting something on the page or on the screen that has enough emotional resonance that you grab somebody and maybe create something in them that create that interest in history, or even create that interest in being more engaged in the civic society in which we all live and making change and working for progress and all those things that we want to see.
Well, so basically come to the Farish.
Come to the Farish, 11 a.m.
11 a.m.
F-R-E-E free.
Yes.
We'll have some folks to talk. We'll have some videos to show, and it should be super chill and super fun.
All the vibes.
Everything's vibey.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming.
It's been a real pleasure.
It's been a great year of collaboration, and
it has been great.
So excited to see all of this come together.
And we're just happy to, it's just the thrill, the two real thrills of the whole thing are the amount of people we've been able to meet and collaborate with, and then also being able to work with you and support your initiatives. Because again, it's we have to support institutions. We have to make sure that the people that are out here doing the work have our support.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And how cool is it that this is all happening during Lex 250 and where we're going as a city after we celebrate?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes, this is a grant-funded project from the Lexington 250 celebrations and commissions. And again, with a focus on telling some stories that people may know, but telling them in different ways. And I would say that we have, through that grant, been able to pay over 20 collaborators that we've brought onto this project, all from Kentucky, most from Lexington. And so there have been people that are doing jobs that they've never done before. We've had people, one gentleman that was on one of our sets that had never been on a film set before. Mm-hmm. So we are... We have been able to spread those resources around and give some people chances to do things that they might not have been able to do otherwise.
Makes my little heart
burst. It's important.
With joy.
It's important. And a lot of young people too. You got to make sure that next group's ready to go.
Yes.
Well, guys, we want to thank you for Lex Talk History again. What a program! And again, it's November 22nd, 11 a.m. Farish Theater. Mark your calendars because you don't want to miss this. This is going to be terrific. And Mandy, some big things going on in December too.
Big things in December. We'll have a podcast.
Yeah.
So that'll be great.
Oh yeah.
But as usual, no preview. The museum, just for a holiday update for folks, we will be open throughout the holidays, but are closed on Thanksgiving Day, Christmas Day, and New Year's Day. But if you have family in town, if you got to get out of your house, come see us. There's a lot of our 250 exhibit will be up. You'll be able to see all the things we talked about. The museum is participating in Bluegrass Gives Day, which is December 2nd, along with 230 other organizations throughout Central Kentucky. So be on the lookout for that and thinking about how you can support all the good work happening in Lexington. And then a reminder about the STEAM Academy event on December 9th at 5:30, open to the public. They would love to have folks come out and see what the students have put together. So if you can make it out on December 9th, do it.
All right. That will wrap it up for today. And we will see you next month on Lex Talk History.
You've been listening to Lex Talk History, a monthly podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the Lexington History Museum. Subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts or download Lex Talk History from the podcast page at WUKY.org. And if you haven't done so already, please make plans to visit the Lexington History Museum soon. Get started on your tour at lexhistory.org.